Lecture 6. I really care about me. How about that? I really care about me. At first, my false pride keeps me from loving me. Isn't that something? At first, my false pride keeps me from loving me. And that's sort of a silly thing to do, isn't it? Keeping me from loving me. Love your neighbor like yourself. You know that gimmick that we have. We're always supposed to be loving someone else, loving somebody outside of ourselves. Should love your mother and father. You should love your family. You should love your friends. What about loving yourself? Have you ever tried loving yourself? Don't you feel guilty when you love yourself? I'm going to go out and have a fattening piece of pie and ice cream. And I don't care. I just want it and I'm going to have it. I want it because I want to love it and I enjoy it. I'm just going to go and splurge. I'm going to splurge on myself. I'm going to buy that new dress I've always wanted. I'm going to buy that new suit that I wanted. I'm just going to go and get myself something just to make myself feel good. Well, we fight it. We fight it. We think we're not worth it. We think we don't deserve these things, that these things are not important for us. We think that everybody else should have everything but not us. I enjoy my wife. She's sort of a crazy lady. She, No, you're fine. She's sort of a crazy lady. She loves her family. Strange, isn't she? And whenever birthdays come, she does her utmost to get them a present. Even though she's on a limited budget, she wants to go out and spend her budget on getting a present for the family. When it's our son's birthday, she will not eat for a week. So she'll take the grocery money and she'll spend it on getting a present for him. Now, he doesn't even know this. He doesn't even know that that's what she's doing. And so, you know, half the blessing is gone. But no, she doesn't care. She gives it to him because she loves him. And then she has nieces and nephews by the dozens from her brother. Not the nieces and nephews from my sisters and my brothers, but the ones from her brother. They're special. Now, why am I saying that? Why am I making that comparison? Well, it's her choice. It's her choice. It's her brother's kids, and she wants to send them each a present. But her brother had no consideration of her at all. He had absolutely no consideration of my wife at all. What did he do? He had 8 kids and 8 birthday presents. And then her other brother had 2 kids. That's 10 birthday presents a year, plus for our son, 11 birthday presents, plus a few people I don't even know about probably, you know. Now, she's saving her money for that. And she uses her money for that. That makes her feel so happy. Well, now, I said to her one time, now, why don't you take that money and have your hair done? Why don't you take that money and buy yourself a new pair of shoes? You're saying that your shoes need it. Why don't you take that money and go and have your teeth done? Oh, their presents are more important. You see, we've been trained that we have to get the love of other people by buying it. And we use the illustration about Ellen here. Ellen has 5 grandchildren, 6 grandchildren, and her grandchildren could buy anything that Ellen could choose to buy, you know, a house, a car, anything, because they're very wealthy, very wealthy. And the grandparents, the other grandparent, gives of their great wealth to the kids, Every time she turns around, she buys them some, you know, like a new Rolls Royce or something like that. You know, just a little gadget or whatever. And so Ellen says, there's no way that she can compete. And I told her, there's no way to compete. I said, but you can give them a gift that they can't give them. And she said, what gift is that? I said, the gift of yourself. Oh, yeah. But I want to give them a gold necklace. I want to give them the... No. Don't start that. Don't ever let them think that from you comes a physical gift. From you comes a gift of yourself. And so she goes to visit them, and she rolls on the floor with them and plays with them, and they just have such a good time with her. They think she's the most wonderful lady in the world. And then they take her and they say, now come, Nanny, come. We're going to go in my room. And they take her in their room, and then they play the tapes that she had made for them, for her, because they love them so much. She made positive thinking tapes for each of the children. And on their birthday, she'd send them a positive thinking tape, something beautiful about themselves, how wonderful they are, what geniuses they are, and stuff like that. And she's done that now for the last 60 years, you know. And the kids are getting older, but they still enjoy it. They still enjoy every one of these wonderful tapes she sends for their birthday. And so that means she has to send 6 tapes for birthdays. As one, her daughter has 5 kids, and her son has 1. Now, she doesn't know whether her son's kid listened to the tapes, but at least he has tapes in his tape rack. And she does know that her daughter's kids listen to it, because her daughter's kids tell her how often they listen to it. One time, she called them up on the phone and was talking to them, having a great time, and they said, Nanny, listen to this, you know, and then they played her tape on the telephone that she was listening. And she thought, my goodness sakes. But you see, when you really care about yourself, you realize the greatest gift you could give to the world is yourself. You cannot compete with the rest of the world on what they can do or what they can't do. The rest of the world can do wonderful things, and you can do wonderful things too. But giving of yourself is the most glorious gift that anyone in the whole world could give to anybody. Give of yourself. And when you give of yourself, you're giving something that nobody else can duplicate, because they don't know how it is. At first, my false pride keeps me from loving me. We think, they wouldn't want a tape from me. They wouldn't want something from me. They wouldn't want me to play with them. But then, all of a sudden, you start playing with them. And of course, Ellen is kind of mean to me. Every time I'm with her when we go to visit the kids, she always says, come on, Herb, now, come on. What do we play, Ellen?
Captain May I.
And I'm supposed to, and these kids only speak Italian now. And so I'm supposed to speak Italian with them, telling about Captain May I. May I take 5 elephant steps, you know, or 5 leaps, or may I take 1 baby step, or, you know, do I have to go backwards because I forgot to say Captain May I? And the kids just love it. And every time I go over there, Ellen says, come on now, we're going to play. And she gets jumping up and down with the kids in her hands. And they, come on, Herb, say something. You know. And so I tell them what to do. And, of course, the littlest ones sometimes, they play the game their own way. But that's all right. The big ones don't care. They just enjoy playing with Grandma and playing with me sometimes, too. But, you see, at first our false pride keeps us from doing that. We think, well, we're supposed to be adults. Now, her other grandmothers, the other grandmother of the children, she sits with them on the couch, and she perhaps reads to them or talks to them, and she's pleasant, but she's a sedate lady. I don't know if she'd ever crawl on the floor. Maybe she would, but the false pride sort of keeps you from doing those things. I'm sure once she started crawling on the floor, maybe she couldn't get up, you know. But once she started crawling on the floor, she'd have so much fun, she'd probably want to come over there all the time and take care of the kids. And that wouldn't be too bad an idea either once in a while, I'm sure. But they can afford babysitters. That's not a problem. They're not asking grandma to be a babysitter. They're asking grandma to come and love her grandchildren and share with her grandchildren what a grandmother can only do. And this is a rare thing. Grandmothers only have one thing to give to grandchildren, and that's love. Not lessons, not learning, an example perhaps, but not teaching them how to behave and how to be good children. You know, the grandmothers who I have met who are really successful grandmothers are the grandmothers who are so confident in themselves. They're so feeling right in what they're doing that the children are just wonderful around them. The children just love to be with the grandmother because the grandmother is a living example of what she does. Now, she may be very prim, she may be very proper, she may be very demanding, she may be very difficult to get along with, but the kids don't mind. They just say, that's grandma. And they get along with her just fine. It's the parents that have trouble getting along with grandmother who's a little persnickety because they think she shouldn't be persnickety. But kids think grandma should be whatever grandma wants to be. And they don't try to make grandma over into their own mold. They just love her just the way she is, and they think she's just wonderful. You see, I really care about me when I am who I am. When I play the role of who I am, I never think of Gertrude as being a grandmother because I think that she just has two more kids. And she'll be having a few more shortly, too. But, Well, Martin's two kids came in the picture, and there may be some more. Martin said he'd like to have some kids, didn't he? Yeah. And, I mean, he didn't cut the tubes, did he? Huh? So, who knows, you know? Who knows what wonderful things may come into your life through Martin's doorway there. Yeah. And I don't think that Adrian is done with his love life. You think he is?
Yep.
That's what you think. He may surprise you. You know, Adrian could fall in love with a lady who has children, and then you'd have more children. Yeah. Oh, no. But you see, at first our false pride keeps us from, but we don't know that. We don't know that. Now, what happened to Mr. Gregor? He fell in love with this lady, and she has this 8-year-old daughter, and he thinks the daughter is just the greatest thing in the world. And we said, when are you going to get married? He says, well, it'll be about a year. And he says, are you going to come to the wedding? And Ellen says, oh, yes. And she says, we'll have a whole troop of ministers there to do the wedding. You'll have a wedding that'll be a wedding that'll never be forgotten. But, you see, do I really care about me? See, Gregor did not want to get married until he had enough ministers to make sure it was going to work. So he's got enough of them, doesn't he now? My goodness sakes, he does. We have to get rid of that false pride that keeps us from liking ourselves. And the only way to get rid of the false pride is just to go about doing things because we want to, without making excuses, without saying, I deserve to have a new coat, I deserve to have an ice cream, I deserve to, just go and do it. Go and enjoy it. And if you're fat or thin, it doesn't make any difference. It's who you are. It's what you are. And you may think to yourself, well, gee, I've always been, you know, trim and slim and fantastic all my life. Well, let's see what tomorrow brings. You may be slimmer and trimmer, or whatever. But don't ever compare yourself to anybody else. Are you happy with the way you are right now? If you are, then continue to see yourself that way. Are you happy with who you are? Are you happy with the person that you are? Then continue to see yourself that way. Do you surround yourself with beautiful friends that are just like you? Then continue to see yourself that way. Do your friends care whether you're tall or short or fat or slim? Not in the least. Do people even pay attention to it? You do, but nobody else does. You do, but nobody else really gives a darn. They accept you just the way you are, which is a lesson for us. We can learn to accept ourselves just the way we are because we're very nice. Or hadn't you noticed? We're very nice, every one of us. We're all very beautiful beings because we like ourselves. And as we like ourselves, stop looking at ourselves with the word judgment in our teeth, you know. Look at ourselves and say, oh, wonderful. You are so glorious. You are so fantastic. You know, if an actor were to stand in front of the mirror and say, oh, I got to lose weight. Oh, I got to gain weight. Oh, I got to color my hair. Oh, I got to do this. He doesn't. She doesn't. The actress, actor stands in front of the mirror and makes faces. Angry faces, happy faces, sad faces, startled faces. They want to learn how to make a face on call. They want to learn how to have a response with their face and with their body and, you know. What's that fellow's name, Maurice Chevalier? Remember him?
Maurice Chevalier.
Do you remember him? Mm. Well, thank you for telling me, yes. Well, Maurice Chevalier, what did he do? He was a lover, wasn't he?
Yes.
But he wasn't a lover. He was a gentleman. He was an exquisite French gentleman. Yes? Tipping his hat, yes? Everything he did was with class. Everything. And then he sings a song, Little Girls, you know, that you love these little girls so much. And it's not a matter that he loved little girls. It's a matter that he loved the song. And he loved the idea of beauty and charm and love. And whenever you think of his name, you think of a person of that wonderful class, that wonderful charm. Now, was he fat? You don't know, do you? Was he thin? You don't know. Was he tall or short? You don't know. He just was who he was. And he liked himself. Now, most movie actors rather do have to like themselves. They don't always do it too successfully, but they have to rather do that. Because if they don't, they cannot put on a good stage performance. You see, many actors have to act in many roles. And so if they're acting in the role of a bad guy or a bad girl, they associate with bad guys and bad girls to sort of get in the mood. And in the process, they sometimes do things they shouldn't do. Like they try out drugs or they try out these different things because they think that that's part of what being a bad guy is. You can be a perfectly wonderful bad guy in the theater without ever having been a bad guy in fact. You follow me? You can play the game beautifully without ever having done it. Can you play a happy person when you're sad? Sure you can. And why not do it? As an actor, you have to do that. Well, if you would work with your life and work with your world so that you would play whatever role you want, now you're going to go visit your father. He's lying on his deathbed. And he's, you know, coughing up nails and stuff like that. And he's just in terrible shape. And so you go in there and you're unhappy because your wife just left you and the children went off to another place and then the world just abandoned you. And now you got to go and be nice to your dad who's dying, you know. So you're going to, you're angry. You know, Dad, my world's falling apart. Dad, well, I'm dying. You know, Dad, my wife left me. Well, I'm dying. Well, Dad, you know, well, get with it, son. You know, you come here to cheer me up or you come here to tear me down. What are you trying to do? Son, if you're going to pull this kind of stuff, I'm going to get out of here and go somewhere else where they appreciate me, you know? And sometimes that works too, but generally it doesn't. The thing is, it could. If you do have that reverse psychology at work there, it might work. But normally people pull themselves together and they try to hide their tears and they try to hide their sadness and losing their father and probably had nothing much to do with him all of his life, but it's your father and he's dying and you're supposed to feel sad about it. And so you go there and you try to act sad. And he knows. Actually, he doesn't care. He doesn't care because he's doing his dying thing, you know. And when people are doing their dying thing, they don't care what other people think or feel or do. They just do their own thing, which is good. Which is good. Yeah. Stefan's having fun translating this. But we always do our own thing. We really care just about ourselves. We don't care about other people, really. But sometimes we pretend. Because you're a mother, and you have six children, and you're supposed to pretend about those children. But you'd rather be on stage. You'd rather have a job. You'd rather be off. And so what do? You create your husband abandoning you, so you must get a job to take care of the children, you know, yourself. Or you create your husband dying, or you create your husband doing whatever, maybe being whatever, incompetent, you know. And so this is what happens. Now, I know if anybody listens to this and says to themselves, well, that happened to me, that happened, but I didn't create that. I didn't create my husband dying. I didn't create my husband running off with another woman. I didn't create my husband abandoning me and letting. You did too. You wanted to be a career woman. You wanted to have children, and you wanted to have a job. And the only way you could do those things as if you didn't have a man around, so you could go and have to work to support the children and have to do these things and have to do that. And you create that. It's a silly thing to do. Be like the Swedish, Norwegian people. Have your husband stay home with the kids and you go to work if that's what you want to do. I mean, that's a much cooler way of handling it than being abandoned and so forth. But really, think about that. Why not create your world just the way you want it? If you want to work, like yourself enough to go and do it. There are a lot of women who like to write. They want to write books. And so they take time during their day. They go up into the attic where no one sees them, and they sit and they type and type and type and type for hours. And then when it's time for the kids to come home from school, they lock up the attic and come downstairs, and they become a housewife again. And as soon as the kids are off to school or wherever they're off to, they go up to the attic and lock the door and do their thing. Now, why do they lock the door? Because they don't want to be intruded upon in their beautiful enterprise. They are spending 1, 2, 3, 4 hours, however many they can, every day on being a creative author, being a creative writer or painter or anything else that they want to do, you know. And we can do these things. We are worth doing these things. And if that's in your picture that you want for yourself, then create yourself doing it and go and enjoy it. But don't feel, I've got to go do this now. It's against this. I'm going to take time away from housekeeping. I'm going to take time away from taking care of the children. I'm going to take time away from whatever. Don't ever do that. Because you're not taking any time. What you're doing is you're making yourself feel guilty. And never make yourself feel guilty over anything you do. Because anything that you do is good and very good, or you wouldn't do it. Because you who are listening here to these words are beautiful. You who are listening are masters. You who are listening are creators of your world. And you don't have to make excuses for anything to anybody for anything that you do. Keep that in mind. I really care about me. And as you really care about you, you open up the doorway to do it. Now, Anita thought, I'm going to go, that's what she thought, I'm going to go to Italy, and I'm going to work in this hotel. And then she thought, well, now, I really should really, you know, I should be doing something different. I should be, you know, walking my spiritual path. I should be doing this thing. But I want to go. And I should be doing this, and I should, but I want to go. She argued with herself, back and forth and back and forth, went on for years, until she finally decided she was going to go to Italy in this hotel. And when she went, do you know what she did? Do you know what Anita did? Anita took Anita with her. She took this person with her that she loves so dearly. She took this person with her, with all of her charm and magic and imagination, right with her. And she didn't exercise her total self while she was over there, but she was pretty close. She didn't sit at her typewriter and write the beautiful things that she likes to write. She didn't sit at her computer and do some magical things that she's used to doing. She did all sorts of other things. But you know, she didn't feel guilty about not sitting at her computer, about not writing. She didn't feel guilty at all. She had arrived at the point over these many years of struggle, she arrived at the point of realizing she could do whatever she wanted to do, and she didn't have to make an excuse to anybody. Now, are you to that point in your life? Am I to that point in my life? That's a good question we ask ourselves. If we ever feel guilty for doing what we think we should do at any time, then we haven't arrived at that point. When you feel like doing something, you say, excuse me. You have no trouble saying, excuse me, when you have to go to the bathroom, do you? You say, I'll be right back, just excuse me a minute. And then you go and do your duty, and you may be 10 minutes, you may be 20. You may fall asleep on the seat, you know. You have a good meditation. And then you come back out, all refreshed and relaxed. And you don't say what you did. You don't say what your problem was. You don't say anything. You just come back and you just enter into it as though you had never left. Now you see, that's the way to do everything in life. Never feel guilty. Just go and do what you want to do. It doesn't have to be what you have to do. But go do what you want to do and be untouched. Be untouched by the world. Be untouched by other people's opinions of what you should do. Do you understand what I'm saying? We are so much controlled by how the world responds to us, of how we as good people should be and how we should act, that we forget to be ourselves and to like ourselves. You know? I dip my hand in my heart and come up with treasures. Did you know that? I dip my hand in my heart and I come up with treasures. Every one of us has within us a storehouse of magic that we have never even paid attention to. Oh, we get a glimpse of it now and then. But we never pay attention to that storehouse of magic within us, because we think that it is fictitious. And this is where we make a big mistake. I tell you, dream your wildest dream. Dream it, dream it, dream it, dream it, dream it. Dream, follow your wildest dream, whatever that may be. Dream your wildest dream. Go for it, go for it. And I say, listen to John. John tells stories. And those stories are real. They're stories right from his heart. And the characters are real in his mind. They're real in his imagination. They're real in every sense of the word. And he doesn't forget and put the wrong coat on the wrong person. He doesn't forget and have the wrong person say the wrong remark. because they're real to him. He talks about these people. He's in his wild imagination and giving you a glorious story, and you just sit on pins and needles waiting for the rest of it. And it's real. Now you say, but it's not real. It's not tangible. It's not something that did exist or does exist. Or yes, it did. Anything we ever say, we ever think, we ever do, anything, at some time, at some point in life, it happened. It has reality. And the things that John tells in his stories has reality. Maybe John might have taken poetic license and added together a number of characters from a number of different experiences that he had in his life. But they happen. They're real. The story he told us about this man in this red suit and this white hat, you know, the red and white hat, that he came into the house and or down the chimney, and the little boy was very upset with him, and he was very antagonistic, and he was thinking, you know, are you for real? Are you really a Santa Claus? And so instead of playing the role to the hilt, Santa Claus played it to the lowest level, and he pretended that he was a different kind of a Santa Claus. And he got into his sports car, and he drove around with the little boy, and he had an empty bag that he carried with him. And yet out of that empty bag, he brought a bicycle and other things. You see, that story has reality. It may have taken place in maybe 50 different places with 50 different people, each of them playing the different roles. He was the psychologist, he was the psychiatrist, he was the philosopher. He was the generous Santa. He was the stingy Santa. See, he skipped one house. Did you notice that? He skipped one house, a stingy Santa. But there was a psychological reason for it. And he went to one house where the guy was not very nice and gave him abundantly. There was a psychological reason for it. And the story, you didn't know you had all that in there, did you? The story has, it could be an entire book on philosophy and psychology if a person wanted to take all the ramifications and study all the implications of that book. I mean, that story, which was maybe 12 to 18 minutes long, maybe a little less, had enough to fill a 300-page book with all of its potential and all of its possibilities and all its ramifications. Now, does John like himself? You bet. Does he listen within himself? Yes. Does he say what he hears? Yes. Do you too? Yes. Each one of you do the same thing. Each one of you are living on that high level of consciousness. Each one of you. But you're afraid to let it out. You're afraid to lie, because you think John is a liar, but a nice liar. That he's telling a lie, that these are not really true stories. These are not really real people. These are just fabrications of his mind, of his rather lying mind. Well, don't think that way. Dream your wildest dream. Now, what if John would dream that he was Santa Claus? And then he's invited to the Church of the Wildwood to be Santa Claus. And so John comes up in his blue Miata with the top down and a bag of toys in the back. And it doesn't take a very big bag back there because there's not much room for it. And then he comes tromping into the Church in the Wildwood, and he starts telling the kids about what he's been doing and where he's been and who he's been visiting and telling a story much like he told us. What would the kids say? Wow! Where'd you get that blue Miata, Santa? That's lovely, you know. I thought you had reindeer and sleigh. And he says, well, I have them too, but this is where I'm at tonight, you know. Now, what would you think of a story like that? Could you conceive of John being Santa at Church of the Wildwood and coming in his blue Miata with his bag of tricks on his back? Could you imagine that? Sure you could. Could you conceive of it being a real thing, a real happening? Sure. Nothing so strange about it. But if you were to tell that story, you would think you'd be lying. You would think you're not being practical, you're not being realistic. Well, practice not being practical, not being realistic. In the first course of the Art and Science of Wholeness, what is it that we teach about God? God is not
reasonable and logical.
God is not reasonable and God is not logical. That's nothing against God, but neither reason nor logic control the divine. And you are divine. So neither reason nor logic should control you. And reason and logic, you say to yourself, is reality. Reason and logic is what we base our life on. And it doesn't have to be that way. Let go of all these limitations that say, the only thing I can say is the truth. Well, what is the truth? Do you believe the story you're telling about Santa? Do you believe the story you're telling about this, what was the name of this guy, Mr. Who came with Jimmy?
Goodness gracious.
Goodness gracious. Oh, my God. Can you imagine a guy being named Goodness Gracious? And he's wearing a long coat like they did in the Old West. And he's got his six shooters on his sides. And, you know, and his rifle probably. And he just, and his hat, wow. And he looked just like these characters from the Old West, you know. And, you know, the rough and tumble ones, the real, like, you know, Doc somebody or other, Doc Severson or whatever. And so when you hear about him in the story, you think, my goodness, that guy's going to be a toughie. And so the first time you get to really meet him, Jimmy comes in, and he's just finishing a banana split, you know? And what an illogical thing for a man dressed in such a costume to do. And then Jimmy invites him to come home for dinner, you know? Jimmy invites him to be in the family. Jimmy invites him to do these things. And then next thing you know, Jimmy has one of the badges that he gives out, Mr. Good Guy badges, Goodness Gracious badges. And you see, the story is so illogical, unreasonable, unjust. It is so stupid that it's absolutely beautiful. It makes your imagination take flight. And you're not bound up in the logic and the reason of anything, because there's no logic or reason there. But the story has a great impact. It has a great moral to it. It is a very strong moral. Doing right and doing good at all times, and always being an honest and responsible person. Now, would you catch that first hearing of the story? You were so interested in the characters and what they're doing, and he kept the characters in their proper clothing. He didn't put a long black coat on Jimmy and put a swimming suit on Mr. Goodness Gracious. He kept them in character, and this is what we can do. We can keep our dreams in character. We can keep our imagination in the flow and consistent with what we want to accomplish. Now, what do you want to accomplish with your imagination? What do you want your imagination to bring forth for you? Do you want your imagination, do you want the fact that you really care about yourself to bring forth in your life goodness and truth and beauty and wholeness, right action and peace and love and abundance and so forth? Do you want that? If you do, dream your wildest dream. Remember how I tell you that time and time, in lecture after lecture, in seminar after seminar, dream your wildest dream, dream your wildest dream, because your wildest dream is your God self, is your God dream, is your divine dream. Michelangelo was a crazy man. Did he study the Bible like a great artist? And did he study the Bible, and did he realize that the story of the creation of mankind by God, the development of the angels, the development of the story of Jesus, the story, that's a big old story that he spread across the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, and he did it in a few years. He didn't take a lifetime work at it, and the Bible is a lifetime work, But he didn't take a lifetime work at it. He did it in just a few short years. And he did it when he was not always so totally happy. He didn't get paid. He didn't have money. He didn't have food to eat. And he had to work in the hot of the summer, right underneath the ceiling there where there's no ventilation. He had to work in the cold of the winter. And it wasn't so terribly cold, but it was damp cold. And it was very unpleasant. But he had his wildest dream. He painted God the way nobody ever painted God before, because nobody ever saw God through his eyes. He painted Adam through his eyes. There was no picture of Adam ever existing. And the Pope didn't tell him what Adam looked like. And he painted Eve, you know. And he put no clothes on. They were all naked as jaybirds, you know. And they were just in their natural state. And he painted the Garden of Eden. He did all this because he liked himself. He listened within, and he heard within, this is how it is to be. And his assistants apparently were good guys, because they painted the backgrounds for him, and they did the other things that they had to do. But he had to pay them, too, out of the little meager amount that the Pope gave him. You see, the magic of our wildest dream takes us with strength and power to accomplish things that we could never accomplish any other way. Are you willing to be fictitious? Jerome, are you willing to be fictitious? Yeah? You know what the word means? Are you willing to be fictitious? Uh-huh. You see, I believe he really means it too, now that he's figured out what I'm saying. But, yes.
Fictitious,
what does it mean? Oh, a figment of my imagination. It is not real by the standards of the world. A book of fiction is a book that's made up out of my mind. It has perhaps real people in it, but the story is created fictitiously without taking any actual experiences into fact, except it might take maybe 100 experiences from 100 different places and put them all together in one person and one story. But fictitious means to be not necessarily true. It doesn't mean it's false. But it means that that particular program, that particular story, had never really happened that way. But then again, it did, because it happened with all the different people that it happened to be put together in that story. Dream your wildest dream. Now, that you understand? Dream your wildest, that's fictitious. Your wildest dream is fictitious, because your wildest dream is something that has never happened to you. And so you're open to this. Anita, again, is sort of a clown. She came here, and we said no horses on campus, because we don't want to have horses to take care of when somebody comes and goes, you know. And so Anita said, but I'd like to have a horse to ride. And I said, okay, fine, have one. And so right next door, two young men lived who had horses, and they were delighted that Anita would take the horses and ride them and play with their horses and do neat things with their horses. They thought that was just the greatest. And so we created our program with a sufficient time for Anita to go over and make love to the horses and get them to do whatever she asked them to do, and every day if she wished, you know. And so she did. And she found the horses very suitable. But in her wildest dream, she could not have imagined that there would be horses right next door available for nothing, without charge, for her to play with. She didn't have to take care of them, didn't have to curry them, didn't have to feed them, didn't have to water them, didn't have to do anything. She just went over and played with them. She was the proverbial grandmother, you know. You don't have to take care of the kids, you just go over and play with them, and when you're done playing with them, then you leave them and go home. But that's what it is. But this, her wildest dream has always been to enjoy a horse now and then, you know. And when she was in New Zealand, she did the same thing. Now, who would have, if she had ever said to her mother and father, I'm going to New Zealand, I'm going to ride horses up and down the beach, and her parents would say, well, be careful, you know. And she went to New Zealand, and she rode horses up and down the beach. And at one point, the horse dumped her and left her sitting in the sand. And she sat there and thought to herself, my goodness, now what? Well, the horse will come back. And so she just sat there and waited till the horse came back. And the horse came back and nuzzled her and said, I'm back. Let's play another game now. And so she was ready. But do you understand? She was playing a game. That was her wildest imagination, that that horse would come back. Now, why would that horse come back when he was free? He could go running off to the wilderness if he wished. But it was her imagination. It was her dream. It was her thought. Thoughts are things. And she created the horse coming back. That's wonderful. So dip your hand into your heart and come up with all those treasures of who you are, because you got lots of them. I love to do things for me because I care about me. Why? Let's see if I remember most of this song. Nowadays I often gaze at women over 50 without the slightest trace of wrinkles on their face. Doctors go and take their dough to make them young and nifty. The doctors I defy to tell me just why. No matter how young a prune may be, he's always full of wrinkles. We may get them on our face, prunes get them every place. Full of ambition worries us, but a prune doesn't sit and brood. For no matter how young a prune may be, he's always getting stewed. So, that's the song of the prune. Now, do you know what it means to be stewed? I thought not. Put in a pot of water and boiled. You're stewed in a pot of water. You know, prunes by themselves are kind of tough. But you boil them, and they puff out, and they're delicious. Right?
Right.
Like plums or prunes or what have you. So, I love to do things for myself because I care about me. The women go and have the doctors take their dough to make them young and nifty, and pick up a little crease here and take a little wrinkle away there and raise the cheeks just a little bit to make them look a little perky, or maybe turn the nose up to give them that little spunky look about them, and raise the breasts or do whatever needs to be done, or do the liposuction and take off 2,000 or 3,000 tons of slab, but whatever. And that's fun. That's part of the game of life, of going around parading, being who you're not. Because who you are is what you are. And who you're not is not what you was before you took away what you are. You have to be very careful about that. Because like yourself just the way you are. And you will see that you will be the most happy person in the world. When you don't like yourself the way you are, you start acting unhappy with yourself. You start feeling you should be on a diet, you should be on a retreat, you should be changing yourself. Be who you are. Be who you are. Eat with good judgment. Drink with good judgment. Sleep well. Run and play a lot. Sounds like those things you'd tell a kid, wouldn't it? Well, if it's good for the kid, it's good for us, right? I'm the only being in the universe for me. And so I don't do anything for anybody else. I'm the only being in the entire universe for me. Think about that. If I am the only being in the universe for me, then why do I care what other people think about me? Why do I wear a dress so that other people will think it looks good on me? Why do I wear a suit so that people think that I'm a very fine person, you know? When I gave seminars in Switzerland back in the 70s, and of course otherwhere too, I would come into these formal settings wearing sandals, shorts, and a slip-over shirt. And I start talking, the people would look at me, You know, you're not really dressed the part of a professor, part of a doctor, part of a you know, professional man. And I don't say anything. I just get up there and smile, and then I start talking. And I share with them what I believe and what I understand and what I know. And within a moment or two, they've forgotten all about what I have on. I could have been standing there naked, and after a second or two, they wouldn't have noticed that at all. People, if you give them who you really are, it's your outer appearance is of no account. Your outer appearance is not what the world judges. It's not what really they're judging. You think they're judging your outer appearance. They're judging your inner charisma that's shining through. And when you like yourself, your inner charisma is glorious. When you like yourself, and when you know that you're the only being in the universe for yourself, then you're happy, and you're filled with all sorts of glorious, wonderful experiences. It is really something great, and I recommend it very heartily, because I think that all of you deserve to have the very best, and all of you deserve to have a life filled with peace and love. I really care about me. Can you see why I'm saying that? I really care about me. Do you really care about yourself? Do you think that you're the greatest thing that has ever come along? You are, you know. What would your world be like if you weren't here? Just think about that. What would your world be like if you weren't here? Well, every impact that you've had upon the world up to now would not have been had. And perhaps the world would be better off if you hadn't been here. But I can't imagine that, because every one of us is an action for good in the world. Every one of us does something in our world that is very special, and oftentimes we don't even realize what that is, and that's okay. We don't need to know. We only need to be who we are, what we are, when we are, why we are. I love you, and I think you're wonderful, and I know it. This thing wasn't turned on because it wasn't turned off. So, that's it. Any comment? Any statement? Question? Happy thought? So let's see. All's clear. Yeah. Okay, now we have to put this on here. We really should have two of these computers sitting here. Now, this is six, right? Yeah, six.
To record, you wouldn't need to be connected, you know, to record directly.
No, the underfoot is not difficult.
When you upload, you need to be connected.
But it has to have the capacity to record. Yeah, let's see where that thing is there.
How do you write substubrious?
Huh?
Substubrious.
Salubrious?
Substubrious.
Obstreperous. O-B-S-T-R-E-P-E-R-I-O-U-S.
With an O.
Obstreperous. Look it up in the dictionary right away.
Yeah, I kind of.
O-B-S-T-E-R.
I wrote it wrong.
Well, I'm sure you did. I mean, it's easy to write wrong.
So it's O-P.
O-B.
O-B?
O-B. Obstreperous. Obstreperous.
Not tampons, O-B. I understood.
Obstreperous.
What's another word for obstruper?
Well, I don't think now I've been, he said before, a naughty no personal integrity.
I said a naughty?
Naughty.
Naughty?
Naughty, and no, a person without an integrity.
Stefan was the one who had all the fun.
Isn't it a little bit rebellious?
What, obstreperous? Of course.
Yeah.
Obstreperous is non-agreeable, non-cooperative, intractable, untrainable.
I will not do that.
Hmm?
Will not. I will not do that.
Yes, 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 yes.
You can all get up.
Why did you tell him that?